The movie version of Khaled Hosseini's 2003 best-selling novel, The Kite Runner, opened in theaters across the country this weekend. It's the story of a friendship between two boys in Afghanistan before the Soviet invasion, how one betrayed the other and many years later found an opportunity for redemption. As an adult, Amir, the central character, now living as a writer in California, receives an unexpected phone call from an old family friend, which sets him on a journey to write his past.
You should come home.
Home? I don't know if now's such a good time.
It's a very bad time. But you should come. There's a way to be good again, Amir. It will not be easy. But you must come, Amir.
Ali.
You're a good man.
Ali, inshallah.
Khuda hafiz, Amir John.
Khuda hafiz.
A clip from the new movie, The Kite Runner. The film's release was delayed due to controversy over a rape scene, crucial to the storyline, but which sparked fears of reprisals against the Afghan boys in the scene. We've asked author Peter Bergen, who travels frequently to Afghanistan, to give us a non-movie critic's review of the film. If you'd like to talk with him about the movie, how it portrays Afghanistan, the Soviet invasion, and the Taliban, our number is 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org, or you can join the conversation on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Peter Bergen is the author of two books on Al-Qaeda. The most recent is The Osama Bin Laden I Know, an oral history of Al-Qaeda's leader. He joins us here in Studio 3A, and it's nice to have you, as always, on the program, Peter.
Neil, yeah, nice to be here.
And first, what did you think of the movie?
I thought it was great. It's very moving. It's very well done. It's very faithful to a lot of aspects of Afghanistan. I was there under the Taliban. It recreated that moment pretty well. It's a great movie. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Had you read the book?
I had not, actually. So apparently the book and the movie are fairly... The movie is apparently quite faithful to the book.
Let me ask you about the depiction of particularly pre-Soviet invasion Kabul that we see in the film, a beautiful house, at least an elite in Kabul, which is well-educated and cosmopolitan.
Yeah, and drinking, and not in favor of the mullahs. And one of the interesting things about the movie is that you see, and the movie doesn't hit you over the head with this point, but you see women walking down the street, and while they're not wearing miniskirts, they're certainly not wearing burqas. They're dressed in a kind of Western way, and the movie doesn't make much of a point of that. It just shows that. And that's pretty much true to what Kabul was before the Soviet invasion. I mean, I've read guidebooks about Kabul that were written in the 60s, and people talk about how men basically wore Western-style suits, women wore, you know, the kinds of thing that you might wear in Paris. Obviously, that was perhaps the elite, but nonetheless, that completely disappeared under the Taliban, and really, it still really hasn't come back. I mean, the Taliban imported the burqa for everybody, of course, in Afghanistan, and particularly in Kabul, and that has not, you know, really changed that dramatically, even 6 years after the fall of the Taliban.
Amir's father, also an important character in the movie, says at one point before the Soviet invasion, the mullahs want to save our souls. The communists tell us we don't have one.
Right. And of course, you know, Afghanistan has suffered very greatly as a result of that dispute, whether it was a communist killing a million Afghans, and then, of course, the Taliban, who imposed their own brutal regime.
And that, I guess, is another question. How you say the scene, I guess the principal scene we see of the Taliban is the famous description, I guess everybody knows, the halftime at a soccer game in the city's football stadium, where a woman is literally stoned to death.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't a routine occurrence under the Taliban. I don't want to present myself as a Taliban defender, but I mean, certainly there's some truth to that. I mean, you may recall, Neil, the famous pictures of a woman being executed not by stoning, but with a rifle, which was that actually did happen. The Taliban aspired to be a totalitarian regime, a theocracy. They were pretty disorganized. So particularly as time went on, you know, they became more and more unpopular. They actually lightened up a bit. They stopped doing some of these more egregious practices as the regime went on. But nonetheless, I mean, the movie's a movie, so it distills certain essences together, and it does that accurately. But the notion that Taliban were routinely stoning women to death, I think, is overdone if people take that message from the movie.
We're talking with author Peter Bergen about the movie version of Khaled Hosseini's The Kite Runner. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. The movie also paints a tremendous contrast. Amir, as an adult, goes back to his house that we've seen in this splendor earlier, before the Soviet invasion, and it's a wreck. The house still standing, but all the trees around it have been, it's been denuded of trees. It's been, there's no green anywhere.
Yeah. Well, of course, as a result of the war, the Soviet war, and then the civil war, and the Taliban, you know, that picture of Kabul is unfortunately quite an accurate one. You know, when we talk about reconstruction in Afghanistan, it's sort of a misnomer. You're actually starting from scratch because the whole place was destroyed. And Kabul under the Taliban, which I visited, there were no businesses, there were no cars. It was there were just people on bicycles, and it was a very depressing and gloomy place. And I think the movie is fairly true to that.
One of the central activities in the picture is, of course, the battles with the kites in the skies over Kabul. Glorious scene at the beginning of the movie where Amir and his friend, the Hazara boy, who was the son of his father's servant, they say under the Taliban they've even banned the kite flying.
Well, they banned everything. I mean, they banned chess, they banned kites, they banned any form of card games, they banned... I mean, I'm hard-pressed, Neil, to think of the things they didn't ban. I mean, in fact, a Taliban mullah was famously asked, well, given all the things you've banned, what are you suggesting for leisure time? And he said, well, go into a park and pray. I mean, so that was their view of anything that fell outside the religious sphere.
Yet it also depicts when Amir goes to the Taliban leader's house, the guards are drinking and playing cards. Is that sort of hypocrisy?
Well, certainly there was some hypocrisy. I think that's probably overdoing a little bit. We know that the Taliban actually took photographs of each other, even though that was against the rules. We know that, of course, the scenes where there is a sort of dancing boy, quote unquote, is being used by the Taliban for sexual favors. I mean, that's not entirely implausible because Pashtun leaders have, you know, because of the strictures against meeting women outside your family, it is not uncommon for teenage boys to be used for that kind of thing.
Let's get a caller in on the line. And again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. And this is Amanda. Amanda with us from Ottawa, Illinois.
Hi. Thanks, Neil.
Sure.
Actually, I think you may have sort of addressed what I was going to say, which is that I loved the book, but I found the scenes, particularly when he returns to Afghanistan, with the whole child exploitation just too much. And it felt to me like the author was trying to demonize the Taliban when they really didn't need to be demonized to that degree.
Well, I mean, you know, the Taliban were undoubtedly not the world's greatest bunch of people, but they weren't the Khmer Rouge. So if on that scale of where the Khmer Rouge killed, you know, 30% of their own population, the Taliban, they did a lot of bad things. The movie, I think, is just a distillation of some things that are true. But if a viewer went to the movie thinking that explained everything about the Taliban, that would be wrong, because the one thing they did bring to Afghanistan was peace and security, which was one of the reasons they were quite popular when they first emerged.
Also, they suppressed the growth of poppies.
Indeed.
And the drug trade. Thanks very much, Amanda.
Thank you.
We mentioned the family in the film are Pashtuns, the major players in Afghanistan, the privileged. The boy is portrayed as a Hazara. Tell us who that is, and is that depiction accurate of him as a sort of a second-class citizen?
Well, I think that depiction was quite accurate. The Hazaras have long been discriminated against in Afghanistan because, A, they're Shia, and so it's a relatively small minority. B, they appear, as the kid in the film, Hassan, he looks Asiatic. The Hazaras actually look very different from most Afghans. They've been long discriminated against, and actually they're one of the, in the post-Taliban era, one of the good news stories in Afghanistan is the Hazara have done pretty well. They've gone from being, you know, not second-class citizens, but fifth-class citizens, to really enjoying more equal rights. The only female governor of Afghanistan, interestingly, is a Hazara in the area where most of the Hazaras live, in Bamiyan.
Let's get another caller online. This is Prashant. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, calling us from San Francisco.
Yeah. Am I on?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that this movie and the book have done a lot to change the perceptions about Afghanistan. Usually when you see CNN or BBC, you think that it's a country of, you know, fundamentalists, there's all rocks and rubble out there. But they're really people like any at any other place. And I think of all the media coverage, this book has done so much to bring that fact out.
Well, I mean, I think there's two answers to that. I certainly agree with the general proposition, but it's a more nuanced picture of Afghanistan than we often see in the media. However, I mean, as Neil mentioned earlier, the fact that these two kids have actually had to be taken out of the country because they may well face reprisals because of the ethnic tensions in Afghanistan, and it's a movie. It's not true.
Fiction.
It's fiction. but the fact that the producers actually, in a very responsible way, I think, delayed the release of the movie for several weeks because of this issue, I mean, I think that speaks to some of the kind of contemporary truths in Afghanistan. The ethnic tensions are much lower than they used to be, but they continue to exist.
Prashant, let me ask you, are you an Afghan?
No, I'm originally from India.
From India. Okay. Well, then, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. The question I was going to ask him, Peter, is another community it depicts is the Afghan diaspora, the communities of Afghans who lived in exile, in the case of the movie, in Fremont, California, but it could have been shot in Queens, New York as well. There are other places where groups of Afghans lived. To your mind, you visited some of those communities, I know. Is that picture accurate?
I think it is, because, of course, the people who could leave were the middle class and the educated and the people who had the financial resources to leave, and which, of course, hollowed out so much of the expertise in the country. So, yeah, I mean, the picture that you see of this, of course, you know, one of the main characters in the film ends up working in a gas station, having had a successful career as a diplomat in Afghanistan. That, unfortunately, is true of many immigrants in this country, you know, who are forcibly sent from their homes.
And the general also is a commanding figure, a man of great respect within the community. So we're talking with Peter Bergen about the film version of Khalid Hosseini's best-selling novel, The Kite Runner. 800-989-8255 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. Email talk@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And here's a comment from John in Palo Alto from our blog. Hello, NPR. I just got back from watching the film The Kite Runner, and my eyes and cheeks are still running moist, my soul slightly aching. I highly recommend this movie. Follows the novel like the youngest of twin sisters duplicating every move of her elder twin sister, making moves on the world. I guarantee you'll give this 3 thumbs up, or I'll pay your price of admission. Please try to pay the senior citizen rate. Thanks again. That from John in Palo Alto, California. And there are people who've said that, you know, maybe the film is too sentimental and too pat. The Amir going back to Afghanistan asks his cab driver, are things as bad under the Taliban as I've heard?
Well, I mean, that's not such a bad question. don't forget that there was almost no media coverage of what's going on under the Taliban. The only permanent presence media that the Taliban would allow was the BBC, and at a certain point Al Jazeera. So, you know, the fact that somebody coming from the United States would want to hear directly, is it as bad as it's said to be under the Taliban, is a reasonable question, I think.
Let's get Tim on the line. Tim calling us from Traverse City in Michigan.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I saw your movie. It was fantastic.
Peter regrettably had nothing to do with the movie. He just went to see it. And in fact, I think we owe him $9.50 because he had
right.
to go.
I'm curious about the kites. Do they really fly kites that much?
Oh, absolutely. This is... an Afghan obsession, and of course they're now flying kites again.
And those
Thank you. Those
paper kites, they don't use exotic fabrics?
I'm not so au fait with like the materials used.
I see. you mentioned the ethnic tensions. The Hazara boy is raped by some Pashtun boys who later, of course, grow up to be Taliban bullies as well. But nevertheless, is it the rape scene that you think causes the controversy, or is it the ethnic abuse that causes the controversy?
Oh, I think it's the rape scene. I mean, even though the rape scene is dealt with in the movie in a way that it's it's suggested rather than depicted. That is enough in Afghanistan. Of course, it's all about the honor of the tribe and these kinds of issues. And the fact that the producers got these boys out, I think, speaks for itself.
The picture of Kabul today, if we take away that image of dust and devastation, is that an accurate picture of Kabul today?
Well, there is, Kabul today, has got traffic jams and 3 million people living there in a city that had 500,000 people living there. So it's a jam. It's a bustling place. It's quite poverty stricken. This is the 5th poorest country in the world, Neil. But I think the film was very accurate. Of course, they filmed those scenes, interestingly, in China, most of them, as opposed to Afghanistan, because... You know, Afghanistan is really not set up to handle a major movie. I mean, the electricity's only on 4 or 5 hours in Kabul a day, if you're lucky. So it's not the sort of place you can make a major motion picture. Plus, of course, there are these other issues of ethnic tensions.
And the picture you have of Kabul, the mountains surrounding it, does it's very individualistic, but as you look at the mountains in the movie, does that look like Afghanistan?
Yeah, it looks like Afghanistan.
Yeah,
it does.
And the picture that were shot in China looked like Afghanistan.
Yeah, they did a great job of recreating it.
Let's see if we can get Chris on the line. Chris in Syracuse, New York.
Hello, Neil. Love the show.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, I have not seen The Kite Runner yet. A lot of my buddies were reading it while I was over in Afghanistan.
Really?
Yes. I was a medic over there, did the long tour about 16 months, and for the tribal areas, there is good and bad things to say about it, but when you really get to know the Pashto people, I had nothing but good things to say for the people.
Did you read the novel?
No, I didn't. I was about three people down on the list as it was coming around, so I just missed it on my way out.
But I bet you were glad to get home where you could go to any bookstore and buy it.
Absolutely. It is on my wish list, hint, hint to my mom.
Okay. Chris, thanks very much for the call, and glad you made it back in one piece.
Thank you, Neil.
Bye-bye. I guess that's another aspect of it. The people who've been there since reading this novel and thinking back on 30 years of history, a terrible history of a country which the United States had an important hand in. I guess Charlie Wilson's war is going to be another aspect of that same history told from another capital, of course, Washington, D.C.
Indeed, which is coming out December 20th, I believe.
Yeah, story of a U.S. congressman who, a playboy, basically, who for some reason gets interested, fascinated, and absorbed by the conflict in Afghanistan and lends his considerable talent to funding the conflict against the Soviet Union, which had some other consequences later. You can read about those in some of Peter Bergen's books about Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. Peter Bergen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil.
We've been talking about the movie version of The Kite Runner, which is now in theaters around the country. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.